Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, and we're here to talk all things garden. So I tell you what, if you have some questions, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'd be happy to try and help you out here. Lisa, Happy New Year and welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
What are you getting for questions? What kinds of things come in at this time of year into your office?
Well, we do get a lot of houseplant questions at this time of year. We also get a lot of tree questions at this time of year, people looking at pruning and so on. And since we're getting ready for our Master Gardener training that's going to be starting in February, we do get a fair amount of people asking about the Master Gardener Volunteer Program and what it's all about.
And what about that Master Gardener Program?
Well, we're very fortunate here in Dane County to have a great group of Master Gardeners. And Master Gardener volunteers are actually community volunteers that Extension trains with horticultural knowledge, and then they go back and volunteer a certain number of hours into the community. So it's a win-win. Mm-hmm. And we have Master Gardeners that volunteer at the Garden Expo, at the Arboretum, Olbrich, at the Extension office, and they do all kinds of great things in the community.
Well, I tell you what, we have callers online. You mentioned trees, and mm-hmm. I think Pat in Concord, Wisconsin has a question maybe about trees. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have on my property, which we moved here about 18 years ago, and there's a was what I call the giant apple tree, ancient looking tree, and gradually over the last couple of years we've lost it. It's a multi-trunk, and gradually over the last couple of years we've lost parts of the trunk, and so my husband cut that off, but in the last year with the bad storms the tree finally took a dive, but it's always been kind of sprouty. And my question is, there are sprouts that grew from the ground, from the roots, since that tree has been cut down, and I'm wondering how strong that's going to be. Is that going to actually produce an apple tree that will live, or am I just dreaming?
Well, those sprouts coming from the ground are actually called suckers, and they're coming from the root system. And
right.
with apple trees, now yours could have been an old seedling tree, but most apple trees these days are produced by grafting, so that the species that is got the roots is different than the scion on top that produces the fruit. So it's quite possible that you would not get anything you would really want to eat from the root system.
Well, I wasn't thinking of, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. It's more of the tree has sentimental value, if you will, for me. And yeah, I haven't been able to eat the apples anyway, because they're always wormy, and there's so much even naturally that you need to do.
Right.
And so pretty much the animals have just gotten, I live on a farm, and the animals have just gotten the apples. But more importantly, it's just I'm wondering about the strength of the tree, no matter what kind of tree it is. It
I becomes. See. It's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other here, not knowing, you know, what I'm dealing with. You might get a more of an apple hedge because of all the suckers than an actual tree form, unless you really worked at pruning it.
Uh-huh. I kind of counted on having to prune it, because the tree itself, since I've lived here, it has progressively gotten more and more and more suckers suckering on the tree itself, actually, that we had to keep trimming just for the strength of and health of the tree.
Right.
It's a nice-looking tree, but
yeah, you know what I'd say? If you want to try it, I'd say go ahead, but I wouldn't bet on getting a tree that looks exactly eventually like the tree that you've got now.
Yeah, the suckers typically have kind of a different structure.
So you might, do you know what kind of tree it is, apple tree it is? If you know.
No, have no idea, but I just liked Well, I mean,
just like the look of it. Yeah, and there's some sentimental value. Well, if you take a good couple pictures of it, or if you have some pictures of it, I'm sure somebody can identify it for you, the type of tree you've got, and then it might be possible to at least get another of the same tree and go that way. Or if you really want to hang on to her, try the suckers. But Lisa is not holding out a lot of hope here for a great
result. For something that looks exactly like what you had.
Yeah, not for a great result. So good luck, and thanks, Pat.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Somebody received an amaryllis as a gift. What about care of that amaryllis?
Well, the neat thing about amaryllis is that they are very tough plants. Now, I'm assuming that the amaryllis that you received has flowered already. And if it has flowered and if the flowers are all done, you can cut back that main stalk right to the top of the bulb. And you let the leaves continue to grow. You keep the plant watered and fertilized. And after a while, probably sometime this spring or maybe earlier, you'll see the leaves start to dry up and the plant will go into dormancy. And you start to pull back on the water at that point and let it dry out and put it someplace kind of cool and dry, and check on it every once in a while.
Sure.
But usually then in a couple of months, maybe 3 months, you would see it start to send up another stalk. So they really don't require a whole lot of fussing with to get them to rebloom. And sometimes they'll even flower twice in a year. So
they're
plants.
Easier. Yeah, neat plants, you bet. Julia in Germantown, your turn. Hi, Julia. Oh, you're breaking up, Julia. Ah, we lost you entirely. You're going to have to try calling again. We get a better line. I'm sorry. You can join in again at 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in with your questions on this edition of Garden Talk as we talk with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. What about watering schedule for plants this time of year? We have a cactus that's 15 feet high.
Oh my goodness!
And in our house, and I don't know if Renee, my wife, watered and I watered too, but I looked down in the. Inside there, and there's water sitting. There was a lot of water.
Oh, not so good. Okay.
So we had to lift that cactus up out of it's in kind of like a double pot situation, and lift it out and drain the water. And the cactus seems to be okay, which amazes me because it was underwater essentially for a week.
Just a little tip here. I use a turkey baster on those bigger plants that I don't want to lift if it turns out that the water's run through and they're sitting in water. So if it happens again so you don't have to lift it, you might want to try that. Of course, you'll probably not want to use that turkey baster again for turkeys, but anyway... this time of year, it's sometimes difficult to figure out what's going on because you've got your heaters on, and that tends to dry out the top of the soil. So it's easy to think that something is ready to be watered when actually it isn't. Because we have less light at this time of year, and the light that we do have is not as intense, typically it's the time of year when you should pull back a bit on your watering. Now, I don't recommend that you, for houseplants, that you water on Friday because it's Friday every day of the year. I was taught to water by weight for the smaller plants. You know, the best thing to do is let it get dry and then water it very well, let the water come through the bottom, kind of heft it up and figure out, okay, this is what it feels like when it's very wet, and then let it get dry again. That that often works. If you stick your finger in the soil about an inch to see whether it's still wet at that depth. If it is, then usually you don't want to water yet. You want it to dry out at least an inch down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some plants that prefer more water or prefer higher humidity. And this time of year, we have real problems with humidity. In other words, we don't have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have desert conditions in our houses. And the thing that we usually recommend for those plants is that you set them on a tray full of pebbles and you fill the tray of pebbles with water, not so the plant is sitting in water, but so as the water evaporates, that it creates kind of a small microclimate, helps keep the humidity up there. You can also mist the plants, but that doesn't tend to last very long either. And if you do mist, try and use something like distilled water so you don't get hard water stains all over the leaves.
All right, we have a lot of callers, so we'll go to the phones, and Jody in Wausau is up next. Jody, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Say, I'm thinking about growing castor beans just as an ornamental plant. Well, I heard they're poisonous.
Yes.
I was wondering how poisonous, and what can I expect growing castor beans in central Wisconsin?
Yes, castor beans are very poisonous. I guess I wouldn't grow them in places where kids can get a hold of them, or certainly not if you have grazing animals that might be nearby. I have seen them used as ornamentals. They're beautiful, beautiful plants, but you know, want to make sure that you don't get juice on yourself, that you know, nobody ingests the fruits, and nobody's munching on the leaves either. I have problems because I have cats, so I always have to evaluate where and how to put plants so that they won't get munched.
Okay. How big should they get here?
Oh, 3-4 feet. Usually?
Okay, I was reading something where they should get like 15 feet.
Not in our growing season. Yeah, they're not hardy here, so you only have the summer months.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks a lot for calling. Cy in Wausau, your turn. Hi.
Hi. We receive a poinsettia every year from a neighbor, and my wife says, she says, this house just won't grow poinsettias. Are they difficult to grow? We live in Elgin, and we don't keep a typically dry house. We have a humidifier, but it's not a rainforest. Is there some length of time that we keep them? And also, are the leaves poisonous to dogs? We have small dogs.
Okay, let me address the poisonous thing first. There is some toxicity, but they'd have to eat an awful lot of them to be poisoned.
Okay.
And as for the growing conditions for the poinsettia, it would prefer bright light, if at all possible, but not a southern exposure where it gets heat as well, because then you tend to get the edges of the leaves turning brown and turning crispy and so on. So probably a west window or a good strong east window would be a good place to put it.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest. Jim Packard, our producer on this edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call with your question at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And Sarah in Lake Geneva is up next. Sarah, hello.
Hi, Happy New Year, everyone. I had the same problem that the last gentleman of poinsettias that I have with jasmine trees. I love jasmine trees. However, it's like the jasmine tree house of horrors at my house. I cannot keep them alive. They look real pretty when I get there, and they slowly die over time. And then by the summertime, it's like their last hurrah, and they don't make it through the summer, which is not good. So I'm wondering how exactly I can keep the one I go buy in the next week or so alive, so I don't have to keep rebuying and I can enjoy it for several years.
Okay. Jasmine is kind of a a little bit of an understory tree where it grows, and it's a vining plant, which I'm sure you already know. They would prefer to have a bright filtered light, so east window, really bright north window would be okay. I haven't grown them that much. What exactly happens to them?
Well, we put them in the back, which is, it's all windows, and it's a south to a east-south exposure, so they get sun almost the entire day. Mm-hmm. And we water them, and I do give them some of the acid water mm-hmm. every couple days, every 2 or 3 days. And what happens is they're beautiful, they bloom, then their blooms fall off, and then their leaves slowly fall off little bit by little bit. It's like watching this poor thing die slowly. And it's just, they never come back. I can't get it to ever come back. And then I figure, well, it's got 4 leaves left. Maybe I can stick it in the summer sun, and it'll be okay. And those 4 leaves fall off, and the tree, never makes it back.
How often do you water?
I usually try to water... I kind of watch it and see where it's dry, and then I tend mm-hmm. to kind of overcompensate for it. So if it's a little dry, then I'll water it until I see water coming out the bottom.
Okay.
And then I'll let it sit with the water at the bottom, and then when I have to water it again, usually that's when I do the acid one. Mm-hmm. Then I let it sit, and then as it slowly does that, then I water it again.
I think that's what the problem is. Yeah, I think it should not be allowed to sit in water.
You can let it. This thing too, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's just that if you've got too much water in the pot, the roots can't get as much oxygen as they need, and then they start to drown, basically, and rot, and that would cause the types of symptoms that you're seeing with the leaves falling off.
So moist but not wet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do I determine how much water to get?
Well,
until it just starts slowly coming out, and then kind of take out, get it out of the pot it's sitting in,
right.
kind of like lift it up, or
yes, you can either use a turkey baster to slurp it on out of there, or you can dump the, bring a small bucket with you and just dump whatever's in the saucer.
Yeah, you could probably set it. Would it be good to set it on pebbles? Or not.
Yeah, I think it would be for a jasmine plant because they do like it fairly humid.
So,
and that might even help with your overwatering problem.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get the tree, do I just repot it and put pebbles at the bottom then, and then soil on the top?
No.
How do I do this?
Okay, use the saucer underneath the pot is what's going to have the pebbles in it. And you just set the pot on top of those pebbles. And you don't, of course, want to have the water come all the way up so the plant is sitting in water. But having some water among the pebbles will help to humidify the air around the plant.
Awesome. I'm going to do that when I go buy it now.
Okay, let us know.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate the call. All right. Dee Dee and Sturtevant, on to you now. Hi, Dee Dee.
Happy New Year.
To you as well.
I have a philodendron. It's probably 10 feet long. And the base of it, there's flowers, and the end of there's flowers, and in between I have these long sticks. Is there any way to get leaves on that again?
Well, not really. Let's see. Now, you're talking about a pothos or a philodendron?
I believe it's a philodendron.
Okay. So it's got real heart-shaped leaves.
Right.
Okay. All right, so you've got a real long stem, is what you're telling me.
Right.
And you said it flowers?
No, it's got leaves on the end and leaves at the base.
Okay.
A long stick in the middle.
Okay, I would cut out the stick in the middle and take cuttings from the end, and you can stick those in the same pot. If you want, you can use a little bit of rooting hormone on them, although usually philodendron roots quite nicely by itself. You can either stick it directly in the soil, or you can put it in water first and watch the roots develop and then put it in there. But particularly if they've been around for a long time, they just don't continue to produce leaves on some of those sections. So I'd rejuvenate it.
And then as far as the watering, I have a prayer plant, and usually when that wilts, I water everybody.
Your indicator plant, huh?
Good idea, okay. Dee Dee. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I have a plant in my office, and I walk by that plant all the time, and I, I noticed it looked a little peaked the other day, and I stuck my finger, except I couldn't stick it in the soil because it was so dry.
Oh, dear.
So a couple of cups of water, and it was looking good again. Frank in Wonder Lake, thank you for calling. Hi, Frank.
Hi. I got a problem with fungus gnats. I find out that they go into the dirt and lay larvae and continually come up, and they're all over the house. I've tried this fungicide for to take away the fungi that they're in their larvae, and I've tried ammonia in water, like 3 or 4 teaspoons per gallon of water, and neither one of them were working. I was wondering if you can help me out there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, they don't only eat fungi. They eat other decaying organic matter in the soil. So a fungicide is not going to get rid of an insect. What they're recommending as an organic control is that you get a raw potato and slice it up and put the slices on top of the soil. And the larvae will be drawn to that carbohydrate source, that starchy stuff, and you'd put it on the soil in whatever pots you've noticed the fungus gnats.
Okay.
And that should get rid of the larva. Now, the adults...
So they'd come up to that? And
yeah.
And then you just pick them off?
You just get rid of the potato slices then. Let's see here. You say you've got them all over the house, though, now?
Yeah, sometimes they get real bad, and they, like, come out a lot, and other times, like, you know, it seemed like the fungicide and or the ammonia in water was, like, kind of keeping them down a little bit. I actually thought I had gotten rid of them for a while there, but they keep on sprouting back out.
Okay,
again.
And you're sure?
So sometimes they, you know, it's like many of them, and, you know, it varies.
Okay. Another thing I'd advise you to do is pull back on your watering a little bit. They tend to like really moist conditions. And if it, you know, if you wanted to, you could even replace the soil in some of these pots. That might help you as well. And you might have to do the potato thing a couple of times because some of the larvae might still be in egg form at the time that you put in the potato slices.
The potato or the skin only, or just to, you know, slice the potato
just
and have the
slice
potato and
of the
skin.
Potato. Yeah, and the skin.
Okay.
Make it as easy for yourself as possible.
About a quarter inch thick? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Just potato discs. It's real easy to do. It might, like I say, it might take a couple of weeks. But that's one thing that's being recommended. And, again, pulling back on the watering because they don't like dry soil. And you're sure that they are fungus gnats and not
little black or gray things with clear wings?
They're very small, and it's really hard to tell. Their wings seem clear, and I did some research, and there's like 4 different types of gnats, and these are the ones that are going into the soil.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's clear that they're in the soil. You move around the plants or tip the top of the soil, and they're all over.
Yeah.
Yep, that's them.
That's them. So try the sliced potato routine and see what happens, Frank. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Chet in Madison, it's on to you now. Hi, Chet.
Hello. I actually live in Athens, but that's fine. Thank you for taking my call. Here's what I did. A few years ago, I purchased some wild grapes from our state nursery.
Mm-hmm.
I planted them about 4 feet apart under a cedar rail fence. And I'm from the Ruth Stout School of Gardening. I don't cultivate. I just thought they would sprout up and cover that fence, and they're alive, but I'm wondering, should I prune them to give them more vigor? They've only grown about 2 feet in 2 or 3 years now.
No.
What would you recommend?
Okay, first of all, is this a good sunny location?
Yes, it's everything is within a wide open field. I was just hoping to attract some birds, you know, and...
Uh-huh.
But they're not, maybe they're just slow in getting started. I don't know wild grapes at all.
Okay. Do you know what kind of grape they are?
Well, they would be whatever would be, you know.
A Concord type, maybe?
Probably. You know, they just have a little, the wild grapes I'm familiar with here, because they grow well in my woods here. wild grapes, so I thought that would be a suitable type. Yes, they're probably some kind of a Concord. They'll
okay.
have little purple berries usually.
Okay. It may be that they're having a hard time getting started. You put it in 2 years ago, you say?
But two or three, maybe.
And
but
it's
I
only
don't
grown...
cultivate. They're growing in tall grass and weeds. You know?
Ah, okay, that's it, the competition.
Oh.
Yeah, they're having some trouble with that.
So you need to...
cultivate, huh?
Yeah, and mulch.
And mulch.
Oh, mulch. Oh, yeah, that would be the other thing, yeah.
You mulch heavily, pretty heavily.
Well, a couple inches,
A couple inches, yeah.
A little fertilizer probably would be helpful.
Yeah, well, I've never fertilized, of course, and thank goodness they're alive. I was always hoping that maybe they're going to catch on, and once they would, that they would beat the weeds and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of our fruit and vegetable crops really have a hard time when it comes to competition from weeds, so you really need to... watch that. And the wild grapes are a different species, and they're very rampant, so they usually will grow anywhere. But this is a different plant that you've got.
So do a little mulching and maybe a little breakdown and put a little fertilizer in there, too, and that's going to help a lot. Chet, thank you very much for calling. Bill in Deerfield, we're on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hey. I've got a couple of tips for the guy who was going to grow the castor beans.
Oh, okay.
Ah, okay.
I grow the purple-leafed ornamental one. And I would say to him that they're so easy from seed right in the garden. That's the way I've kind of gone to. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to start them inside, don't start them more than like 2 weeks before you're going to put them out, because they will grow really fast. And he should be prepared to have at least an 8-foot-tall plant if he keeps them well watered, and I always stake them. I've had them as tall as 10 feet.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They can grow literally inches overnight, and the leaves are huge. So I stake them because you can get some pretty good winds off the lake here in Lake Mendota and where I'm right now, and I always stake them. But be prepared, 8 feet is not uncommon.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. All right, 8 feet. Joe in Wisconsin Rapids, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hello there. Looking for some advice on how to get rid of scale on a bay laurel tree.
Oh, dear. Scale's tough.
Didn't want to hear that.
No, I don't suppose. okay, well, there are, let's see, bay laurel trees. So you've got this growing inside then.
Yeah, it's about 3 feet tall.
Okay, is it absolutely covered, or is it just got a few? Or?
The lower leaves tend to be the ones that are hit worse.
Okay. There are, if you don't mind using chemicals, there are some sprays that you can use. Unfortunately, it's really hard with scales because they have those hard shells and the chemicals tend to run right off. So probably you'd be looking for something that is a systemic product that you can use on houseplants. That would be your best bet. Other than that, there's always hand removal. I mean, I've seen people go at them with toothbrushes and all kinds of other things. This is why I was kind of groaning when you said scales, because, again, in a houseplant situation, they're just really, really tough to get rid of. But those are the two main, either physical removal or some kind of systemic product.
Yeah, and there are systemic products out there for indoor plants.
Yeah.
So.
Not many of them anymore,
Not many, but there are some. Or the toothbrush or Q-tip. I've heard people using Q-tips, too, with a little bit of...
Alcohol. Yeah, and that works on mealybug. It might help to etch the hard shell, the alcohol.
Good luck, Joe. Thanks for calling. Barb in Germantown, we're on to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I have a question about peace lily plants.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I've had a number of them, and I love them. They flourish. But what typically happens is that they'll start getting brown at the tip of the leaves, and that eventually will work toward the stem, and the whole leaf will become brown. and then it appears in a number of leaves in the plant, and I'm wondering if this is a watering issue or an insect issue or what.
Okay. I don't think it's an insect issue.
Okay.
I have certainly seen the brown tips. That's fairly common, and that can happen. You're not using soft water, are you?
We do have a water softener.
But do you use cold water typically?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I use room temperature water.
Yeah, okay. As long as you're not using, you know, hot water.
Water out of the hot water tap.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
No.
Then you shouldn't be using soft water, which is good, because that can certainly cause that sort of burn. You can also have that kind of symptom develop if there's various diseases can occur. But I'm just wondering if it doesn't have something to do with either the type of soil that you're using or something about the water.
Okay.
Have you, let's see, what kind of soil?
Regular potting soil. It's nothing.
Nothing special.
No. And what typically has happened to the plants I've had over the years is that once that starts, then eventually it will get down to two or three leaves that are
right.
All that are left.
Right.
And even the new ones coming in are brown.
Okay. How often do you fertilize?
I'm not very good at fertilizing.
Okay.
So
well, then I know it isn't a fertilizer burn.
That's what I need to do, huh?
So it's not fertilizer burn.
That was...
No.
Okay.
No, I think there's very little chance of that.
All right. And when you water, how often do you water, and does the water come through the bottom of the pot?
I water about once a week, and sometimes a little comes through the bottom of the pot.
Okay.
But I have them elevated so they're not sitting in water.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Well, then I'm not really sure what is going on. Are you reusing the same pot every time?
No.
I think if there was a pathogen in there, that might be causing a problem. If they do get too pot-bound, sometimes you can see symptoms like that.
Okay. What kind of fertilizer, if I might try that, and what would you suggest?
I would suggest one of the granular slow-release types of fertilizer. It comes as a little round prill, and you sprinkle it on top of the soil. You only have to put it on once a year, more or less, because it goes about 8 months. And I wouldn't bother doing it during the winter at this point in time. But you could start putting it on in March or April.
Okay, great. I will try that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And we finally have some open lines, by the way, so you can get on with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you'd like, you could email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Mark in De Pere now. Mark, hello.
Oh, I have a hibiscus that I kind of inherited after my parents died. I have it in my apartment, which has a southeast view. It's about 4 feet tall, about 3 feet across, but it's starting to wilt. I don't know, maybe it's been in the same pot for years. I don't know whether it's going to need some special fertilizer or something. I don't know much about the plant.
Okay. Wilting can be caused by a couple different things. The first one is that maybe the plant is very pot-bound and that the water just, there's not enough soil in there. The water's running kind of right through. That's a possibility. The more sinister possibility is if it's been overwatered that you start to get root rot, and then the plant actually, because the roots have been damaged, can't bring up water to the leaves, and so the leaves begin to wilt. So you get almost the same sort of look from two different sorts of causes. In general, I wouldn't fertilize the plant during the winter. But again, start in April, and you can use that slow-release fertilizer. These types of plants really like to go outside over the summer.
Oh, yes.
And do make sure, though, that you spray for insects before you bring it back inside.
Oh, I've never done that.
you would just use something like Safer's insecticidal soap or other brand of insecticidal soap, making sure that you spray underneath the leaves because most of our bad actors hang out there, our spider mites, the white flies, you know, mealybugs, whatever. And, you know, just making sure because you don't want to bring in anything that's going to get on the rest of your plants as well as bother your hibiscus.
Actually, it's the only plant I have. It's
kind of
overwhelms the apartment. One bedroom apartment is 4 foot planted. I'm thinking about making it my new Christmas tree.
There you go.
It blooms all the time, and I think it may be dry.
Great.
Actually, maybe I'm not. Maybe I should put the pebbles on water, but it's in a 1.5 foot pot.
Okay.
It's not an easy plant to
repot. When you water it, does the water run right through?
Not really, no.
Okay, well, then it probably isn't pot-bound. And the south exposure that you were talking about sounds really good for it.
Yeah, I know it needs a lot of light.
Yes, they do. I would, does it wilt maybe because it's in a place where it gets a lot of direct sun and it's too hot?
No, it's not too hot at all.
Okay.
In this apartment house, it's right by the patio window, and I think it's it's awfully dry in this apartment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there is some heating vents around it, but
maybe you want to try the pebble idea, then to keep it humidified, and when you water thoroughly, and then let it dry out again.
Mm-hmm. And good luck, and thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mealer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net, Larry Mealer with Lisa Johnson. And Lisa, we have a call coming in from Kathleen in Oak Creek. So let's go there.
Hi, Larry.
Hi, Kathleen.
I want to say I like the Christmas tree, the hibiscus Christmas tree idea, the last caller. That sounds cute. My question is, I have lilies of the valley, and I've moved them to two different areas, and I always have this problem. After they bloom, they start getting these brown spots that get bigger and bigger, and then the leaves get really unsightly. And I don't know, is that a disease or just the natural way that they end their blooming cycle? And is there anything you could plant in with them, if it's natural, that would kind of like make it look a little spiffier?
Okay, first of all, it is a disease, and I am trying to remember. Brian would be mad at me. Which type of leaf spot disease it is. I believe it's a fungal one, not a bacterial one, but I could be wrong on that. I'm sure if you Google Lily in the Valley brown spot, it should come up. You could also send a sample of that to Brian's lab, the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic. If you want to find out exactly what it was.
Okay.
But you may want to intersperse a ground cover or maybe some annuals. I assume this is a pretty shady area, right?
Right.
Okay. Maybe you want to do some of the hostas that are stoloniferous that spread instead of being just clumps. That would be one thing you could use. You could use sweet woodruff. That's another nice natural or native, I should say.
I love sweet woodruff.
Isn't that a cool plant?
Yeah.
That works well in shade. Lamium tends to be a little bit more aggressive, but it does work well in shade as well.
And they wouldn't shade out the lilies of the valley because I do like picking the flowers.
Those are pretty aggressive.
Okay. All right,
I wouldn't worry about that.
So it's a disease and I might be able to find something that'll cure it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Julie in Dodgeville. On to you now. Hi, Julie.
Good morning. I'm not sure if you folks addressed this question. I have two ferns in a music room where I teach, and there are little black bugs that are flying around as well as the notes. How do I get rid of them?
Those are fungus gnats, and they live on organic matter that's in the soil. You typically tend to see them when you have plants that are maybe being kept a little bit too wet. So that's one thing you can do is pull back on the watering a little bit. The other thing that you can do is put some raw potato slices on top of the soil, and the larva will be attracted to them. And, you know, you take them, take the potato slices away after like 24 hours, and then get some new ones after about a week if you're still noticing that you have adults flying around. Now, the potato slice thing won't get rid of the adults, but it will get rid of the larva and the soil, and the adults don't live very long.
Well, that's clever. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it. And Annette in Stevens Point, on to you. Hi, Annette.
Hello. My call is to an attempt to help the lady with the fern.
Okay.
I would suggest that maybe she does have a lot of minerals in her water, and maybe she would like to get filtered water. I wouldn't get distilled water, but
oh, the peace lily. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This you're right. Distilled water is a really good option, or you can use what comes out of your humidifier or your dehumidifier, I should say. That would work too.
And another thing that might be helpful for her is take a jar, preferably glass, with a cover on it, of course, and put eggshells, just crush up eggshells from raw eggs that you've used, and steep the shells in the water and the ferns. That's a good fertilizer for the ferns, and they really like that.
Oh, so you're thinking the calcium. So
it must be calcium, but I don't know. It's maybe from the inside of the egg white or the egg too, because it gets smelly. So you don't want to keep it too long.
Yeah. So you let the egg sit in that shell sit in the water, and then you pour the water on the plant.
Right.
Yeah, and then you get rid of the eggshells.
Yeah.
I would caution people though, working with raw eggs, you know, to be careful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, you wouldn't handle it.
Yeah.
No. All right. Thank you, Annette. Appreciate the call. We had an email from Jeanette wondering, what is a good spaghetti squash to grow in northern Wisconsin around Grantsburg and Webster? Am I better off just growing acorn and butternut squash? So that's one question that she has.
Okay. And that one.
I like spaghetti squash.
Yeah. Yeah, they're neat. You know, all the squash are long season plants. Sounds like she's had good luck with the acorn and the butternut. Really, I am not sure if there are any new varieties of spaghetti squash that would work or not. We do have a publication that is put out every year that tells you all the new vegetable cultivars that have been developed, and I don't think the new one is out yet, but the old one, that old publication, Larry, I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah,
Like Gardening Guide or
it's Gardening Guide
for whatever year. That would be where I would look first for the recommended varieties.
And I'll see if I might be able to come up with something there too. How about growing peas in northern Wisconsin? Keeping out the rabbits and, you know, outside of a really good fence, is there anything you can do to grow peas? And what's a good pea for northern Wisconsin?
Okay, peas are cool season crops, so we don't have any any problem growing those in northern Wisconsin. But you still probably want the shorter harvest varieties. I'm wondering, is she looking for sweet peas, though, or snap peas? I mean,
I think
the sugar snap.
Yeah, I think the standard pea.
Okay, not the field pea.
No.
Okay. Again, I would go to that that publication, and
What's the title of that? We'll find out. We'll find out. Stay listening. We'll come up with that answer.
And for the rabbits, I usually, you know, if you're trying to just fence off a small area, the chicken wire or hardware cloth is a good option. You can use blood meal sprinkled around the edge of the garden, but that's it. You know, you do have to reapply it every time that it rains. So really, a fence of some kind is your best bet.
All right. And we have David Monford had a suggestion for people trying to save money on seeds. He says go to the local hardware store and buy them in bulk. Perfect for a victory garden. And I guess there are some that sell in bulk. So, and Liz in Dodgeville has a large jade plant. She needs to repot it, but is afraid of possibly killing it.
Yeah, they're so brittle, and they break so easily. Boy, for a large plant like that, I try and like wrap the bottom of the plant with something like an old sheet just to help me give it a little bit more support while I'm trying to maneuver it around. The nice thing about jades is that they do like their roots tight and somewhat pot bound, so you can leave them in the same pot for a long time, but not obviously forever. The good thing is that if you do break off some of the branches, that you can reroot those quite easily. So there may be some attrition, but you shouldn't probably lose the whole plant. I'd say if you can get somebody to help work with you, you know, to hold on to various parts of the stem and so on, to help support it. You know, I do realize they're kind of weighty plants. So that's what I would recommend to try and keep the breakage down.
You should have seen me with the 15-foot cactus. We had bath towels were wrapped around that cactus, and I had to have Renee, my wife, help me out on that one for sure. Karen in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, it's so nice to be on your program.
Thanks for calling.
I have a day off, so I'm actually able to call.
All right.
I had an answer for the person that had the bay laurel with a scale.
Ah.
I've battled scale. In ferns, it's really pretty hard to fix. But I've used alcohol, and I've used, with a Q-tip and all this stuff, and it would help for a while, and then it didn't work. Well, I found something that's worked on, scale. Well, I don't know what the life cycle is, but it seems to get from one plant to another.
Mm-hmm.
I've had four or five plants with scale, and I've only had to throw the fern out because I found this product called Organicide, and the basic ingredient is sesame oil.
Okay.
And that really does it. Now, I don't know if it would work on a real thin leaf like a fern, because I found after I tossed the fern. But it worked on the bay laurel. It worked on jasmine. Somebody else talked about a jasmine. That's a similar problem. But it works great. And so I even, there's a nursery nearby that I do business with, and I was worried about them because of the chemicals that they'd have to use. And I recommended using this product, and they already had been using it successfully for scale.
Do you know, does that have neem oil in it?
It has sesame oil.
Sesame oil. Okay, because it occurs to me, too, that neem oil might also work in that situation. And for scales that we have on outdoor plants like fruit trees, you can buy products, dormant oils, that help suffocate the insects. It's just that we don't have a lot of things labeled for inside, but I think that neem oil might be labeled for that. You'd have to check the label. And this other product you said, Organicide?
Organicide. Okay. And I'm not at home, so I can't give you the website. I suppose you could Google it. I got it at Outpost Natural Foods. They have fertilizers and products for plants there, too. And it, I get it bulk now, so I can mix my own. Because you can get it bulk and then mix it with water.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've had like an orange lemon tree that I started.
Oh,
I'm a teacher, so I do
all
these goofy things. But it's like 4 feet tall, and that got it, and I treated it, and it's fine. And also bay laurel, and like I mentioned, the jasmine, and a philodendron, which I have a philodendron question. I have one, a split leaf that's, I've had maybe 6 years, and so it goes out on the deck in the summer, and it comes back in the winter, and it's doing great. It looks real happy, and it's got these air roots.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's if I should be trimming those once in a while, but there's really a lot of them, and they trail all over the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I know what you mean. Yeah, and you're tripping on them and that sort of thing.
Well, I kind of wind them around. I put the pot, it's quite a large plant. It's probably 4 feet tall. So I put it in a base that's elevated, and then I wrap the roots around that, and I have a dish underneath to catch the water. But I just wonder how important those aerial roots are to that plant.
I wouldn't cut them all off, but you can do some judicious pruning. We had at the Dane County office a split-leaf philodendron, too, and actually the aerial roots attached themselves to the tile floor. Oh. And so when we pulled them up, it didn't come up all the way. And so to avoid that sort of scenario, you can cut them back a little bit. You can selectively remove some, maybe up to 25%, but I wouldn't take any more than that.
All right. And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Lisa, we have Chris from Shorewood online, so let's go right to Chris. Chris, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Sure, hi. Here's my situation. I have a crab tree that has berries on it. It's about 5.5 to 6 feet tall. It's been in the ground about 19 months from a respectable nursery. And here's the problem. The bark has been stripped off from the ground up to about 2.5 to 3 feet up. My questions are, what caused it? Is the tree going to live? And if so, what can we do to help it?
Oh, boy. Okay, let me make sure here that it's stripped off all the way around down to the wood.
Yes.
Okay. Then the answer is no, it's not going to live. So that really takes care of a lot of your other questions. As to what did it, wow. Sometimes we see rabbits chewing on bark, I remember when I worked for a nursery company, one rabbit got into a fenced area and took out, gosh, must have been like 10 crab trees. And, again, just gnawing on the bark because there was nothing else to eat. I would guess rabbit, and you could verify that if you saw any rabbit droppings near the area. Occasionally you'll see squirrels chewing on bark a little bit, but not to that extent.
Okay. But then if we replaced it, how could we protect a new one?
Oh, good. That one's an easy one. There is a product called Rodent Guard that you can get. It's a tough plastic material that's in a cylinder form. And, you want to make sure that you get it big enough so that it's not impinging on the tree's growth at all. And it's really very effective at keeping both rodents and rabbit types of things from chewing during the winter. It also somewhat shades the trunk. But I'm sorry to give you such bad news so early in the year.
then we won't have to try. So I've seen people wrap trees like in burlap or anything. Is that any way to protect it as well?
Not from rabbits. They may be doing something like that if they've had problems with sun scald on the trunk. Sometimes with young, thin bark trees, you get the sun shining on it intensely during the winter, and that part of the trunk warms up. And then, of course, the sun suddenly goes away, and you end up with catastrophic cracking and cankers and other things forming in the bark because it heated up, on one side of the tree and didn't on the other, and that, the source of heat goes away so quickly and it's so cold outside. The Rodent Guard should actually help shade the trunk some. So that's one thing that you can do to prevent that sort of thing. But again, burlap's not going to keep out the wabbits.
Okay.
All right. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. John in Milwaukee, it's on to you now. Hi, John.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I'm standing here in the dining room looking at two jade plants that are infected with something. I had them both out in the yard this summer. It's a black fungus-like something up right up against where the leaves come out on the stem. Any idea what I have?
Okay. You can wipe it off with your finger?
Yes.
Okay. What that probably is then is sooty mold. And sooty mold is a type of fungus that forms on the excretions of sucking insects. You often will get it on plants outside. Boy, I had some scale on my magnolia tree, and everything was coated with this black film. Because as the aphids or spider mites or whatever it is sucking on the plant excrete this sticky, sugary substance called honeydew, and that's what the fungus grows on. So the bad thing is that it may indicate that you've got some sort of sucking insect feeding on your plant. The other possibility is that a plant above it, when it was outside, had aphids or something feeding on it, and it just dripped onto the jade foliage, and that you don't have anything there except for the sooty mold. And the sooty mold you can pretty much wipe off, and that will take care of it, maybe using a Q-tip since jades are so darn brittle. But I would look for the presence of sucking insects, scales, aphids. They don't usually get spider mites. I think that the foliage material is too tough for them to get their little suckers into. But you do sometimes see the scales, which are brown, oval, hard-shelled insects. They almost don't look like insects, which is what throws people off.
In other words, there's not some sort of a chemical or a spray I should put on. I should just
actually
scrub this off.
Yeah, jades don't take to being sprayed very well. The leaves often will dry up and fall off. So I would just, use the organic method if it's at all possible.
All right.
I'll do that. I thank you very much.
Thanks, sure. John. Appreciate your call. And Trenton in Janesville, on to you now. Hi, Trenton.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We were wondering if pear trees would go over the summer, because me and my grandma got in a conversation about if we thought pear trees would survive during the winter all the way up here in Wisconsin. That's what we were wondering, if they would survive during the winter, and if so, what would be the best, what season would be the best time to plant them?
And so you're in Janesville, so.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Yes, we do have pears that we can grow here in Wisconsin. Some of the more popular ones include the Bartlett pear, which is very popular. And you would plant that in the spring. You can either get it as a bare root plant, and that's the easiest one to plant as far as weight-wise. Or you can get a potted pear, and again, you'd usually plant that in the spring.
So you can do it.
Okay. Also, we have two big trees. Also, would they survive during the winter?
The pear trees?
Yeah.
Yep.
Pear trees will survive the winter, yes.
Yep, sure will. Especially in Janesville.
There's also one more thing.
Uh-huh.
Do they are those like the trees that are really competitive, like in the forest where they try and get the sunlight while blocking other trees out?
The pear trees do need a lot of sun in order to produce pears. So you need to make sure that they have a good sunny spot that you're growing it in. I wouldn't say that they're the most aggressive tree, but they will kind of stretch to try and get to the sun.
Mm-hmm. So keep it in a good sunny location, Trenton, and thank you for calling.
Just one more question.
Okay.
What would be the best time to plant them?
Okay, the best time to plant.
The pear trees?
Yes.
That would be in the spring.
So probably in April, maybe?
April or May, yep.
April or May. Good luck. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Appreciate the call. Yeah, it's always nice to hear from our younger listeners, too. And Rodney in Alabama. Your turn. Hi, Rod.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to hang up after I do this question because I drive a semi for a living. But
okay.
Anyway, my mother lives in Saginaw, Michigan. She grows cactuses that have outgrown her house. And she's farmed them out to various schools, and she gets them back in the spring and after school closes. But needless to say, this year she's not going to be able to bring them, well, next year she's not going to be able to bring them back in the house. I'm wondering, is there any place or anybody that's willing to take these plants for good once they outgrow her house?
You know, I check at the retirement communities, I check at community centers, and those are places where sometimes people will take plants and grow them there, or in terms of the community center, sometimes there are people in the community that would take them.
Mm-hmm. And you might even check, Michigan has a Master Gardeners program, too.
They sure do.
And you might get some help from her county extension, whatever county she's in, her extension horticulture agent would maybe be able to help her out, or the master gardeners in the county. So that's another place. But I like your ideas about the community centers because oftentimes there are taller rooms and
mm-hmm.
there's opportunity to actually have something like that. And if worse comes to worse, you can always hack them off. Many cactus could be can be hacked off and lower and start regrowing again. But it's nice when you go to all that trouble of growing those cactus up tall. It's awful to have to cut them off. I had to lop 6 feet off of mine once, and I hated it. I hated doing it. So there you have it, Rod. Thank you very much. You can join in. We finally have some open lines again. At 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Faith in River Falls now. Faith, hello.
Hi. I had a question about an indoor orchid.
Okay.
We had one that we bought, and it bloomed about 10 times, and it was beautiful, and it's rusted now. How do we get it to bloom again?
Do you know what kind? Is it a Phalaenopsis, or what?
It was a pea name, yes.
Phalaenopsis, okay. Those are some of the easier orchids to get to grow and rebloom. The dendrobiums are also fairly easy to grow.
Okay.
You know, you don't have to do anything special, really. The orchid will, when it is got enough energy to rebloom, it will...
Okay.
It will start to send up flower buds. And they usually do that every year, every other year, and typically about the same time as it bloomed the first year. Sure that it's got bright indirect light, and make sure not to overwater it, but the humidity is important.
So you definitely want pebbles underneath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the water runs right through it. When we do water, it's just a very small amount once a week, and now it looks like it has new buds, but it's been flowering in the middle of the house without direct sunlight.
Well,
do
great.
Do you recommend we put it in sun now?
I would say that if it's been flowering for you in that location, it's happy. So don't move it.
It actually had buds in the store where we bought it, and it was fine without light. And I wasn't sure if I should change it now or what.
If the leaves aren't turning yellow, if you're getting more flower buds, sounds like you're doing something right. And I would expect the water, by the way, to run right through, because the orchid mixes that they use are mostly big bark chunks, because orchids actually grow on the bark of trees. They don't like to have their roots surrounded by soil. So it's okay that the water's running through that pretty well. But it would like as much humidity as you can give it.
Here's an email. Thank you for calling, by the way. Here's an email from Kathy in Lodi. Says, hi, I just took a Master Gardening series of classes with Lisa, and it was a fantastic experience. She's a great teacher, and my classmates were a group of very interesting and fun people.
Oh, that's nice.
So far, I learned that I didn't know anything about gardening. Have a lot more to learn. I'm looking forward to the hands-on time in the teaching gardens. My question for Lisa is, when is the final exam due?
Well, I can tell you that it's due on Monday. So
so there you have it. But, I brought this up because as a way of mentioning the Master Gardener classes, because you teach them and you have some coming up in February.
That's
again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We have our general Master Gardener volunteer course. That I teach two sections, and they both start in February, but one is a morning class and one is an evening class. And we are fortunate in Dane County that we have a teaching garden that's attached to our building. And although it isn't the greatest use this time of year, except for pruning exercises, during the summer we do take people out and use that for the class.
And we had Karen email us about fungus gnats. She says you can get rid of fungus gnats by buying some clean sand at the garden center and covering all the soil in all of your plants. The gnats can't reproduce in the sand. Be sure to cover all soil completely. This will take about a month to 6 weeks, but it works. I found this solution in Ask Cisco, your gardening questions answered by Cisco Morris. It really does work, she says.
Wow. I could see that. I could see that working.
She said, your plants may look strange covered with sand, but after a while you can just mix the sand into the soil. There you
have
that.
Yeah, and be sure not to start overwatering again so that they can get in there.
Becky and Kiwani, on to you now. Hi, Becky.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple of chokecherry trees in my lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been there for, probably almost 15 years and have been doing well. One is larger than my two-story house. But now this last summer, they developed spots in the leaves, and they dropped leaves all summer long.
Okay, that is a fungal disease. And unfortunately, a lot of our fruit trees are susceptible to leaf spot diseases, similar to what you're describing. That's one thing that I can think of that's going on. The leaves don't look chewed, do they?
No. I kept looking at them thinking there was some sort of something chewing on them, but they're just spots in the middle of the leaf rather than on the edge.
Yeah.
And the bark now seems to be, splitting a bit on the trunk and peeling a bit.
Hmm.
So I'm really getting concerned because it's a beautiful shade tree.
Yeah.
And I have people who are lining up to get the choke cherries. They're supposed to be good for something medicinal.
Hmm. You know, what I would do is when the leaves start spotting this summer, I would send a sample to Brian Huddleston in the Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic.
Okay.
You could also, if you wanted to email him a picture of it before you send a sample, that might help him out too, although he doesn't usually diagnose from pictures, but it could give him a heads up as to what's going on. And he should be able to tell you exactly what disease that is and whether it makes sense to treat it, and if so, how, and so on.
It's hard because it's such a large tree that a friend had offered to spray it, and I said, well, wait till you see the size of the tree.
Yeah. And, of course, when you don't know what exactly the disease is, you don't want to spray just anything. There may be some sort of drench that you can just water into the soil and not have to spray it foliarly.
But typically probably a fungus. Okay.
Probably,
and Brian Huddleston is the man to contact?
The UW Plant Diagnostic Lab.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You can find it on the web.
Thank you very much for calling. And Lisa in McHenry, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Listen to your show as often as I can.
Thank you.
I have a bougainvillea bush in a pot that I bring inside every winter,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's really unhappy.
Oh.
I put it in front of an east-facing window. Most of the leaves drop. And when I do get it back outside after Mother's Day, I think we're in growing zone 5A,
mm-hmm.
It tends to just struggle the entire summertime just to regain its foliage. And I just wanted to know if there's anything I can do both in the overwintering and once it gets back out in that longer day of sunshine that I can do to make it happier.
Mm-hmm. Has it been repotted at all?
When I bought it, which was the end of the summer 2 seasons ago.
Okay, I would check the roots and see if you've got a pot-bound plant there. Also, I would make sure to put some fertilizer in it in the spring. You can use a granular, slow-release type of fertilizer. The bougainvilleas are typically very vigorous plants, so I'm thinking something must be going on with it. You say that it drops all of its leaves over the winter?
Almost immediately when I get it indoors, yes.
Okay. A lot of plants will drop a number of their leaves, but typically not all of their leaves, when they go inside, just as a reaction to the fact that the amount of light that they have available has been severely curtailed. So as much light as you can give it inside over the winter, you might even consider supplementing it with a grow light and see if that makes any difference. You may want to cut it back a little bit, just tipping, taking no more than 25% off all the way around and see if that invigorates it. I wouldn't do that until spring, but that may help stimulate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you might also try one of the bloom booster fertilizers in spring. Typically, they're pink, granular type things. I know Miracle-Gro makes one, but there are other companies that make bloom boosters too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I've written it down. I'll go look for that. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yep, thanks for calling. And Brian and Eau Claire, on to you.
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you very much. This is the left-handed gardener from Eau Claire. See, I got a couple of questions. First of all, will Bartlett pears grow decent in Eau Claire in Zone 4? And then also the Master Gardener program, is it still open for registration? And who and how and where do I take care of that?
Okay, the pear question, it's going to be iffy in Zone 4. The plant may be perfectly hardy, but the flower buds are not always very hardy. And because you have a shorter growing season and the pears tend to ripen towards the end of the summer, you might end up
iffy.
Yeah, I wouldn't
And Master Gardeners in Eau Claire?
I know that they have run Master Gardener in Eau Claire. You would call your county extension office and see if they're running them up there. There is also a statewide program that is run as a distance education program. And there's a Wisconsin Master Gardener website, and you can find out more about that one on that website.
Wisconsin Master Gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And thank you very much for calling. Lisa, thank you. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Okay. Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Monday, we'll take a look at what we can do around Wisconsin this time of year. Gary Knowles, our guest. Stay with us here on the Ideas Net.